When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Xbox Game Passengers Podcast. I'm your host, Derek Kranevelt, and this is the show where each episode, myself and a guest will dissect and discuss a single game that's available on the Xbox Game Pass service, which was usually chosen for us completely at random. Whether it's a magical or a horrible experience, we will force ourselves through it, share our thoughts, and let you know whether or not a game is worth your time. At the end of every episode, we will also randomly draw the game for the next show as well, so you always know what's coming up on the horizon. And as I mentioned, I'm always joined by a guest I'm really glad to have back for the first episode in like a year or whatever. The world kind of fell apart and, it seemed like a good excuse to not do anything with my life or myself. But I'm back talking to Doogie, who has been on a few episodes in the past. Doogie, how are you today?
I am very well, Derek. How are you, bud?
I'm doing well. I ask that like we don't actually talk all the time.
All the time.
But they don't know that.
The magic of television.
The last time we spoke was when we talked about Observer or something, which is another Bloober Team game, which apparently we love on this show because we did Blair Witch when it came out. We did Observer when it was randomly drawn. Blair Witch, I was so excited for, I chose. This game, I was so excited for, I chose. So a minute ago when I said chosen for us completely at random, there's like it's my show, I'll just do
there's a few exceptions to the rule
for the most part. I am really, we started back the podcasting bug hit me again recently in we started up the old Geekscape Games show again, so myself and Shane and Josh is going to be on the next one, and some of the old crew, and Carlos has been there, and Katie from Geekscape, and just getting into the habit of me and you talk about like games regularly, but yeah. Just getting in that habit of like talking about video games with your friends or trying to be more conscious of like what I'm feeling about a game when I'm playing it type thing has just, it's great. And so starting that, I think really felt it was the catalyst I need to kind of make this happen again. Cause I really liked doing this show. Excuse me. I've got the hiccups naturally.
You do. Are any of those episodes out yet? Because I'm excited to hear them.
Yeah. So that show is every 2 weeks.
Nice.
And so there are three episodes since the just look for one that was released, not 2 years ago, and they are there, and they've been a blast. That show is, we talk about just everything that we've been playing and kind of discuss that because we're all playing different stuff versus discussing the same game like we're going to do here. Mm-hmm. And then we talk about some like important news and that sort of stuff as well. This show, of course, generally focused. That show's every 2 weeks. Xbox Game Passengers, we're going to come back monthly at this point because that means I'll be doing three podcasts a month, which feels like enough at this time.
I definitely feel like it feels like enough.
And what I was kind of feeling with what I was, I, you know, this show was every 2 weeks prior to it disappearing for forever, not forever, but almost forever. it was just getting to the point where it felt like I was only playing the game for the show. Whether I was enjoying that game or not, and it felt like I was being forced to, and just having a bigger gap there, and also doing the other show means that, you know, it'll just hopefully it'll give me that motivation to play this but also spend some time with other things as well. So,
and just think of the time that you've managed to save not doing one of these every week or 2 weeks or whatever it was. You've managed to finish Andromeda.
The pandemic has affected everyone in different ways, but I definitely went through a lull of, just not playing games or not starting something and dropping it in an hour because I just felt like I was unmotivated to continue it or not enjoying it. So I'm especially glad that I didn't force myself through doing this at that time, because I feel like I wouldn't have enjoyed it and neither would anybody that was trying to listen to it. So I feel like I'm coming back from a good space. I've had so much time to play so many other games. I played through like the Uncharted series. I played through Mass Effect Andromeda completely randomly because, you know, all of a sudden me who has never played Mass Effect before, you know, I'm a sucker for hype and everyone is getting hyped about the Legendary Edition, which comes out in a couple months. Oh, and, man. And I was like, how can I play Mass Effect sooner? Oh, this is the most recent one. Also, I loved that game and, you know, we've talked about it and I talked about it on Geekscape Games a couple times.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, sure it's got problems. Sure. It's clunky in areas. Sure. The facial animations look like they're out of like a PS2 game or something like that. But, overall, I spent about 45 hours or something in the game and had a blast with it. And yeah. I'm really sad, you know, I think that series is dead and it very much felt like it was acting as the first chapter in the Andromeda series. So mm-hmm. I'm sad that we won't be seeing these characters anymore because it did have some loose ends and some open-ended pieces and that sort of thing as well. But
yeah, it's funny. I think like, as is well documented about me, like my love for the Mass Effect trilogy or at least the first two games was it just has that amazing story driven character driven kind of gameplay that I loved. And it's funny, since you and I have talked about Andromeda, because you had such a blast with it this time, I installed it like a few weeks ago when mm-hmm. you started playing it as well, and I was just like, you know, maybe I'll go back and play Andromeda. And I've played like the first couple hours or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I was like, other things came out and other things happened. So I've been playing a bunch of different stuff. But every time I start up the Xbox, I always see it there on the hard drive. Yeah. And I'm like,
it's probably ready there in quick resume too.
Like, will be. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Whenever I'm playing, I'm always like, I should just go. Derek really enjoyed it. I should go back and really do it. But, but no, the temptation hasn't grabbed me.
Yeah. Well, and I think that I was in the best spot to play it because I don't have any preconceived notions of what Mass Effect should be or how these characters should be introduced or whatever. Yeah. Like, even if it's a bad Mass Effect game, you know, everyone seems to love the series for the most part otherwise. Mm-hmm. So even if it's a bad one, it was my first one.
Yeah.
And, you know, talking to Carlos and Shane, who both were fans of the series, they're both like, how the hell are you enjoying this? It's such a piece of garbage. You're a piece of garbage for liking it, like all that sort of stuff.
And, well, now, of course, I'm really interested to see your take when you do play through the Legendary Edition. Like, I'm so excited to hear your take on it, having loved Andromeda. I'm wondering whether you're going to go back and be like, what are you guys talking about? Like, the original trilogy is garbage. It's horrible.
right? Sarah Ryder was the best developed character that they ever did. I'm like just counting down to May 14th when it releases. Yeah. Like, I'm so excited. And every day when I like see another big game get delayed, I'm like, oh no, it's Mass Effect's turn. It's Mass Effect's turn. And it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it's coming any day now. It'll get delayed a month or two. But
I probably. It'll be worth the wait.
It'll be worth the wait, I'm sure. I mean, really, if I really wanted to play it, I could just play the old ones. But that seems like a, you know, poor choice when these 4K 60 frames per second versions are about to drop, essentially.
Well, I did. When you let me know about Legendary Edition, I actually installed Mass Effect 1 because it's there on EA Play and Game Pass and stuff. And I installed it and I started playing it and I was like, oh no, this is horrible. I've always said Mass Effect 1, it feels like you're piloting a cardboard cutout of Captain Shepard or Commander Shepard rather. And it just, it plays horribly. So I hope that they have smoothed out some of that. And that's the kind of rumor.
Well, how could they not have at this point? Like,
And
I mean, when they have mentioned some of the things that they focused on, it sounded like it was bringing a lot of quality of life improvements to Mass Effect 1. You know, Mass Effect 1 seemed like it was their primary goal there in terms of improving it. So.
Yeah, I think they said they kind of wanted to have a consistency between the three of them because they do feel very different. And I remember, you know, thinking that at the time that Mass Effect 1 plays so differently to 2 and plays so differently again to 3. Yeah. And they changed how biotics work and how the engineering skill worked and stuff. So it, like the gameplay in all three is quite different. Mm-hmm. And it feels like even though the story takes place over a few years, you know, it feels like some of that technology moves very quickly or it changes vastly differently and no one kind of mentions it.
Yeah.
And so it's just kind of like gameplay that turns up and you're like, wait a minute, we've not been able to do this before. What the fuck?
Oh yeah.
So it's interesting. It's interesting, but I'm excited for it. I really am excited for it.
You mentioned, you said something about EA Play and Game Pass. That's a good thing to mention as well, in that the last time that we did this show, Game Pass was Game Pass was amazing, but it was a very different place. Mm-hmm. Like, just, you know, in the past few months, we've gotten, well, you know, in the past week or so for a PC, but in the past few months, EA Play which is another subscription service. It used to be $5 a month or like $30 a year in Canada or something like that, which gives you, you know, access to a huge back catalog of EA titles, including Mass Effect Andromeda and the trilogy. That's how I played Andromeda over the past few weeks. That's been added to Game Pass as well, just further increasing the already incredible value of it. But also just in the past couple of weeks, the long rumored slash announced Microsoft's acquisition of ZeniMax, including Bethesda, including id, including Arkane Studios, and a number of other developers as well, that's also gone through. So we have a whole handful of new Bethesda titles on Xbox Game Pass, and also the expectation that any further titles from these developers will just be on Game Pass on day one, which feels insane.
The value of that, as you say, is just enormous. I started playing Star Wars Squadrons the other week, and it's great, it's awesome, and then I just decided, of course, that I was gonna, because I've never played Skyrim through on PC.
Yep. Okay.
I've always only played it on Xbox, so
always like a rough, you know, aside from the Xbox One version, which obviously improved things, I think the 360 version and stuff would have been a pretty rough experience in terms of like load times and textures.
It definitely was, and playing it on the Series X and on PC now, it feels so different. Like, it feels so smooth, and like obviously it's running at 60 frames a second rather than 30, so like those kinds of things, like it's a pretty noticeable difference. But of course, like, so I've now started run number 8642 of Skyrim on the PC.
Stealth Archer number
number 8642. it's awesome, and it's such a huge acquisition as well, as you say, like to think of the amount of really great and huge games as well. Like, I mean, Skyrim, you could dump thousands of hours into.
The next Elder Scrolls game, like if that's only on the Xbox consoles, like that's going to make a lot of people very angry, but it's also going to sell a lot of sell a lot of systems. Although, I mean, that said as well, it very much seems like the Microsoft's goal at this point, and for the last couple of years, has been very much like, we don't care like what you play it on, as long as you play it on Game Pass type thing. In terms of like adding Game Pass to Android phones, it's finally going to be hitting Apple platforms soon, it sounds like, and PC and everything like that. I have to imagine that you'll be seeing the Xbox app or Xbox Game Pass app on smart TVs before long.
It's such a smart way of doing things. Like, it really, really is. When you and I have talked about this at length before, but like, when you think about how the world is these days, I remember being a kid and you know, having to save up the $80 or whatever it is, $90 to go and buy this game that I knew was coming out. So I had to save up for weeks and weeks and weeks and months and months and months to be able to go, okay, it's launch day, I can go buy this.
Or like wait for a used copy to finally pop up at Blockbuster or something, just so I can save some money on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a thing. And to think of the amount of titles, like, you're spoiled for choice. You really are.
Because like so many games have been added and removed from Game Pass since like we did the show, like I use to choose the next game, I use like this app where you just insert a list of a list of things and then hit choose and it just spits one out. And so I started from blank just because there's so much has changed on Game Pass as of right now. And I didn't even put in, you know, I put in all the EA Play stuff, but only the most recent versions of the sports games on there, because I don't want to play Madden 16 or FIFA 15 or anything like that. But there's more, and this is not including PC, which has a whole different library. I don't have a way to play those games. More than 350 games in that list at this point.
Fuck.
Which is insane.
That's
like,
crazy.
I can't even fathom that. Yeah. And I swear a year ago it was half that. Like, it has grown.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember
an insane amount.
I think the last time you and I did one of these, I think we were kind of talking like 150 games. Mm-hmm. That's insane, right? Like, huge. Right. And like the fact that they've over doubled that is just amazing. Now, as you say, there's a little bit of overlap with, they've got Madden, you know, 15 through to 20. Yeah. But I mean, still.
Yeah. But that number was not including the old ones. That was just the newest one.
Yeah, exactly.
So
which is
technically even more than that.
It boggles my brain.
Yeah. And I mean, we're going to like start to see, like, there's still a handful of Bethesda games that aren't on there and all that sort of thing. Like, and you know, it's been the last couple months in terms of releases for both of the new consoles, both on the PlayStation side and the Xbox side, has been quite a lull, I would say, which is part of why, you know, in the past few months I've like played the Uncharted series and and I've played Mass Effect Andromeda, and I'm very much a person who likes new shiny things. So when there's lots of new games coming out, like, you know, I'll play a new game that I was excited for 10 hours, and then I'll be like, oh, there's this other newer game over here, so I'm just gonna like never look at you again. I'm gonna go over here. So getting some of that time lately to go back to these older titles has been pretty unreal as well. Should we get started? So this was another game that I did not randomly choose. I just chose. And part of that is, you know, it's a very, this game, The Medium, has always very much looked like an homage to like the old classic survival horror games, like the Silent Hill and in some ways even Resident Evil, like just in the way that they share their like fixed forced perspective camera angles, which like increase tension and all that sort of stuff. So this was like one of my, like, aside from Spider-Man Miles Morales, this was my most anticipated game for the new consoles. So I was a little bit sad when it got delayed, but it finally dropped at the end of January, I believe.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and I was stoked to jump into it, but, you know, a little bit apprehensive in terms of my excitement because, you know, is like Bloober Team is a very interesting developer. I'm really glad you're here for this conversation because, you know, we played through Observer. You know, they've released a number of games. I really liked Layers of Fear. I really didn't like Observer. And I don't think you did either.
No, it was terrible.
I really liked Blair Witch. So I was hoping that they could, you know, have another hit on their hands with this one. Before we jump into our thoughts, do you want to tell us a little bit about what The Medium is about?
I do. So the synopsis goes, discover a dark mystery only a medium can solve. Travel to an abandoned communist resort and use your unique psychic abilities to uncover its deeply disturbing secrets. Solve dual reality puzzles, survive encounters with sinister spirits, and explore two realities at the same time.
So I think it'll be hard to really discuss too much without jumping into spoilers.
100%.
So before we jump into spoilers, like, what is, you know, is this like a... Is
trigger
it a
warning.
Give it a try? Is it a skip? Warning. Is it a must play for you?
Oh, Derek, it's a skip for me.
It's a skip.
It's a skip. It really is.
I mean, I might have guessed that based on how long it took you to get through this like, 4-hour game.
Yeah, well, it's funny. We should probably like own up to the fact that Derek had asked me to do this episode of the podcast pretty much almost as soon as we started playing The Medium. And I was like, yeah, great, like, absolutely, let's do it. Like, I kind of started it up, played kind of one session of it, and then hadn't gone back to it for about a month and a half. And then we had this running joke between us where you would text me and be like, any progress on The Medium? And I'd be like, no, not yet, but I promise this weekend is the one. And I think I promised you like 7 times, but I did finally get through it. What about you? Is it a skip, must play, give it a shot for you?
I hadn't thought about it really until you asked me just now. I think it's definitely not a must play. I think that it felt like a must play for me, but I had very specific expectations of what I thought this game would be, and it met some of them. But I also think that it's a really different game from what is generally getting released these days, and I could see a lot of people just finding it boring as shit. And I did not feel like that. I feel like I didn't love it. I feel like I quite liked it, actually. We'll get into it, but I feel like it's a give it a try for me. I feel like it's interesting too, as a, like, this is kind of the first big, and it's not like big, but it's the first, aside from, I think, like, the Falconeer kind of real series console exclusive, like, that wasn't also on the previous consoles.
I think that's probably a bit accurate.
Yeah, and so I think that a lot of people were expecting kind of this, like, visual tour de force and like, really, like, something that would really show off what the new consoles are capable of. And I think that this is not a spoiler, this is in every trailer, and the whole, like, premise of the game is, like, a lot of the game is played in this kind of, like, dual world scenario, where you both, on screen at the same time, you're seeing the real world, and then you're seeing this, like, other spirit world type thing, and you're in both of them, and you see them both in a split screen view, and so everything looks entirely different, and everything would have to be textured twice and all that sort of stuff. And so they You know, the game runs on the Series X at like a scaling 4K, 30 frames per second, which is tough to look at after I've been playing so many 60 frames per second games, I have to say, which is a new thing for me as someone who's not really ever played, you know, games on PC or anything like that. But yeah, so it like, it had some slowdown. Like, it didn't feel like the technical darling that I think some people were expecting it to be. Also, Bloober's not a big AAA publisher, so.
And like this is, yeah, that's a really interesting point, and I do want to touch on that. And when I say it's a skip, it actually makes me really sad that it's a skip for me, for a couple of different reasons. And I think, A, they're not a huge, massive developer, so this was a really ambitious, really ambitious thing to do, to be able to be like, we're going to have these two worlds that simultaneously will render. You'll be able to see two things in both screens and blah, 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 blah. And I'll say as well, the first section of it, the opening is phenomenal.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
And I was so excited, and I was so ready for it. I was so hyped for it. Going through that, like, essentially, the it starts out that you learn you're a foster kid, and you go back because the guy that fostered you has died, and you got to go back to the funeral home and kind of prep him. You put his tie on him and the body and things like that. So there's this beautiful section where you're wandering around this this kind of like beautiful but ultimately creepy home, and like you clearly have a bad relationship
like
an apartment
with it, like above a funeral
home. Like, yeah. And it sets it up so nicely. And then you go down to the funeral home, and then there's this moment where, like, you know, you can feed the cat, and you learn, this is clearly the tutorial of learning the mechanics of the game. And I got so excited because there's this little bit where you have to develop a black and white photograph, and you actually have to develop it. You've got to put the light on it, and then you've got to put it in the developer, then the stopper. And like, going through that, I was like, this is really cool. Like, this is going to be super immersive, and we're going to get to learn more about, you know, the history of this girl and blah, blah, blah.
It kind of feels very like point and clicky at that point.
It does.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, it really does. And this is kind of where my problem comes in, is that, you know, when you and I first talked about the meeting, because I knew nothing about it, and you had mentioned like, hey, like, have you heard about this game? And I was like, no. And then we looked into it, and I saw people start to refer it back to like the original Resident Evil and Silent Hill, which are games that like not only terrified me as a kid, they were really scary as a kid and still as an adult.
Totally. Yeah. Well, and like Silent Hill 2 is like, that was, I think I played it shortly after it came out, and I would have been like 12 or 13 or something like that. Like, I think that is the game that like that game terrified me, but it's on such, everything it does is on such a deep level that I think that game is like what gave me like, just, I don't know, my love for really dark, depressing, terrible stories.
Like
this.
Absolutely.
And like The Last of Us and like all that sort of stuff. Like, it's, I eat that shit up like far more than anything else. And you know, and obviously Silent Hill, like, it went from being one of the greatest series that probably like ever, to just utter shit in like the course of like two or three games. And now it's all but dead. You know, this in terms of like them, the Bloober team talking about being really inspired by it, but also like bringing back like the original Silent Hill composer, Akira Yamaoka. Like, when I got into like I love his music, and I love the like weird, like mechanical sounds that he uses. And like, when I got into, like, when I bought a turntable this year, like two of the first records that I bought were the Silent Hill 1 and 2 soundtracks. Like, I was like, that is how much I love like his whole thing. And so to see him coming back for like this homage to these old survival horror games, that's what made me the most excited for it. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's okay. And like, you touched on a really good point, is that like, there was so much of that was tied into the old survival horror stuff, but let's be really, really honest, this is not a survival horror game. this is a point and click adventure game from a fixed camera angle.
And we can, I think that's enough. We can probably jump into spoilers now. If you haven't played it, or if you want to play it, if you don't want to hear what happens, you should probably stop listening. But Doogie said skip it. I said try it. Do what you want. We're not the boss of you. I had noted that it just kind of feels like a spooky detective game more than anything. Like, aside from a few specifically designed scenes, there's not really you're never worried about your survival. There's no survival aspect to it. There's no combat really in this game, except for like a few times you have to like hit a button at the right time when these weird flowers are trying to eat you. Like,
And that's it. Like, I think one of the key elements of any sort of survival horror is always the ability to run out of resources. I think it's something that actually the Resident Evil 2 remake, I think, did really, really well.
Yeah.
Is that you had to kind of plan your route. You had, okay, I need to get to that room, but I've only got 6 bullets to do it. Like, am I going to go through the office? I'm going to go through this.
Yeah.
And this, as you say, it just didn't have it. Like, it's this again suffered from the same thing for me that Observer suffered from.
Oh, one thing I wanted to ask, did you like this more or less than Observer? I wasn't expecting a skip from you, so I wasn't expecting to need to ask that question, but which one of these games was worse for you?
It's so funny. I asked myself this question actually, because again, this started out so strong, and the section that you, as I say, in the funeral home, really like almost moving, like really like I was invested and I wanted to know what happened, and I wanted to know because at the end of that section, like, you know, you get this phone call that's like, oh, I know who you are. And that's it. That's all she has to go on. And then she gets in her car and drives halfway across the country.
Well, and it's like, you don't know who this person is. And she's not into it at all until he says, like, it all started with a dead girl, which is like this vision that she's had, or this dream that she's had over and over and over again. So the fact that he
references,
like, says this phrase, like that is the thing that makes her like decide to go do this.
So that first section was great. And then it just all fell apart for me so quickly when you get to the you Neva. Know, as it says, the Neva resort, this communist resort. And then it was, you know, push the block here to open this door, to find a key, to open this door, to do, and that's just really when it kind of started to fall apart.
It was very rinse and repeat there, in like there was always just like, here's something that's blocking you.
Yeah.
So go find the MacGuffin that you need to like stop this thing from blocking you. Oh, now this thing's blocking you. Like, it felt like half the game, once you get to Neva, half the game was to like get to the point where you could get the bolt cutters, because every game is like
needs a bolt
or every door needs a bolt cutter, and it's like always just like a floor above you or something like that. One of the things I thought really weird too, just in terms of her going there, like, this game is it's set in like the late 90s at this point.
Yeah.
So like, we're in a spot, and so there's the Neva resort, like it gets abandoned after like a big massacre happens, and it was like covered up by the government and all this stuff, but like the place still existed, and like a lot of people probably disappeared, and it's like the late 90s. And so the internet, not as we know today, but the internet exists. Like, did she not try to look this place up at all first? Like, she didn't bring, like, she literally rides her motorbike there. She doesn't have a bag. Like, she's like, oh, I'll you know, get in and out in like 45 minutes. Like, I don't need a bag. I don't need to bring anything with me. I don't need a weapon. Like, she didn't even bring a flashlight. You have to find the flashlight.
And
that,
like, and this again, for me, it goes back to that whole thing. And it was moments like that when I realized.
You're really ruining this game for me. You know that?
I know. I'm so sorry. I knew. And what was really interesting is like, when I finished the game, I kind of sat back and I was just like,
I'm going to have to lie to Derek.
Well, no, I had to be like, how am I going to break this to Derek? Because I feel like Derek is going to have enjoyed this more than I have. And there was a couple things that you mentioned there that I want to kind of swing back on. The bolt cutters. This is one of my like major gripes. And I don't know if it's a Bloober Team thing, if it's a walking simulator thing, if it's like just this type of game thing, but it really bugged me in Observer as well, how the character narrates everything. Now, I get that if you're the only voice that's there, and this character is pretty much like, you can hear, because she's a medium, so she can see spirits, and so she finds things that are called echoes, which are like little memories from an object or whatever.
Which I actually quite liked those. Like, those felt like it was like a slightly more interactive, like, audio log thing. And there was times where it, like, I mean, sometimes those were the blockages that you needed to clear before you could get to the next chunk. But it also felt like it gave a lot of context to the people that existed in this space before the massacre happened.
Yeah.
Or in some cases gave you information as to why or what certain people did.
Yeah. So those kind of things, like, I get that if you don't hear anything from the character, you know, you might not be able to resonate with them. You want to be able to know what they're thinking. But there's this moment when you do actually find the bolt cutters. Now, bearing in mind the situation, you're in this old, creepy, abandoned place. You've gone through this like emptied out swimming pool that's covered in blood. And you've gone through these rooms where there's multiple like army cots that are stacked up that are covered in blood. And there's chains on the walls. And then she picks up the bolt cutters. And the line of dialogue that she says is, sounds like a spy name, cutters, bolt cutters. And I was like, hold on, you absolute sociopath.
Just a weird like change like, of tone. Yeah.
Tell me, Derek, if you're in that scenario, in fact, you recently told me you were in like a really old creepy school and there was no one else there. Yeah. And you in that moment, you know, are you going to open up like a candy wrapper and be like Reese's peanut butter cups? Like, is it?
But she's in a spot where like, and especially part of why her, say, like growing up above this funeral home is important, is it really like she's got this, she's a medium, she's got this ability like that, living there and being around essentially dead people or spirits like so long, like it really made her powerful, I think, which is why she like has part of why she has the ability to like go in between these worlds and all that sort of thing. She's got to be super desensitized to it.
Yeah, I suppose.
You know, I use humor in uncomfortable situations as well. Maybe that was just her trying to do that. But yeah, there were these weird tonal moments as well. So yeah. Like you meet this like creepy, like porcelain masked little girl with one arm who like, she's like super interesting. Her name is Sadness, which then like you shorten to like a pet name. You're like, hey, Sad, how are you? Like,
yeah.
But at one point, like you had split up at some point and she was like, meet me over here, and you take a while to get there and she's kind of upset or something. Mm-hmm. And then she's just like, oh, like I'm gonna stick to you like a tick, like she just like this like weird cutesy little thing, and she like puts her hands on, I don't know, it's super funny. This is like a ghost girl with a porcelain mask in a weird like abandoned place. What if she did all the murders? What if she caused the massacre? Why are you like, at the same time, I guess she's a child, but she's a weird ghost child, like
and like initially I'll admit as well, like when you first meet Sadness, I was kind of like, oh, well, here we go. Creepy small child, creepy abandoned facility. Clearly, she has caused the murders in some kind of capacity, because you always hear about this crazy massacre that happened in this place. But then, like, once you start really kind of dipping into the spirit world and the, you know, you can be in the real world and the spirit world at the same time. See, I really have a problem with this mechanic as well, because I feel like it didn't add anything to it, and I almost feel like it would have been far more creepy, because essentially all that it ended up being was either gameplay or a cutscene where you're just looking at your character
acting to nothing. Yeah,
and
I noted that down as well.
So okay, so you've put all this rendering power into doing these two moments. And you're just showing me in the real world talking to nothing, and in the spirit world talking to this girl with a weird porcelain face. I almost feel like it would have been better if they'd had just, it was all full screen, but you maybe had like elements of that were just in the real world, but only you could see them. Like that, that might have made it a bit more relatable, or it might have been a bit more creepy. Like with that whole thing, and you reference like Silent Hill 2, like, you know, turning a corridor. And all of a sudden you're not in the street anymore, but you're in like this old abandoned school and like, you know, those kind of moments. Cause
when it was always like the shift to the hell world or whatever, it's always like, it's a thing. And like things get way more dangerous when you're there, but then, and your whole goal is, or part, like a large part of your goal is to like just survive until it passes or whatever. Like, I guess it kind of like just the fact that it, you know, rather than it being like a big action or a big like problem like it is in Silent Hill, it's just part of the world. And so not a lot like different actually happens in there, I guess. It's just like a creepier version of the same thing. That said, I did like in like it is used for some of the puzzles as well. Like you have this ability in these split screen sections, which is not the whole game, but it's a lot of it. But you can like essentially hold a button to do like an out of body experience where she basically like leaves her real world like body behind, and so you're then controlling just the spirit world, Marianne, and so like you can then potentially like like if a staircase has fallen down in the real world, maybe it hasn't in the spirit world, and so you can like do something that will then affect the real world that'll let you like continue on your path. I did find but you can't take too long because you'll like die, like you'll your spirits will be separate like forever or something. I did find that stuff kind of neat, and which I don't know how it would have worked if the world wasn't split, but did it add enough that it's worth doing the whole time and having my frame rate?
And you are right, like those kind of moments where you completely leave the real world and you're in that kind of spirit world and it is very timed, you've got to work things out quickly. I almost think like that would have posed more of a challenge if you didn't show me both screens, because again, every time that you had to do that, let's say there was like staircase is a good example. So in the real world, you're looking at this broken down staircase. In the spirit world, you're looking at a staircase, but it's got this like wibbly wobbly magic in front of it that like is the big glaring thing to be like, oh, you gotta fully invest in the spirit world to do this. And I almost feel like if it was full screen real world and I have to work out, okay, do I need to get past the staircase? Hold on, let me go check in with the spirit world. But it's a timed thing. I need to like, you know, put that investment in and actually be able to work things out. And that, like you said it earlier, it felt like a kind of point and click like detective game more than anything. The detective aspect of it, if it is going to invest in that, and you know, it says it in the synopsis, it's a mystery. It's a dark mystery, and it's not. It's there's nothing to work out because everything gets worked out for you. Like that constant narration of, oh, well, I've just found this thing. I wonder if that'll fit in that box over there. Like they don't give you the opportunity to actually try and figure things out.
Right. Doesn't the narration though, like you find out later that she's kind of been telling this story to the spirit version of Thomas, who ends up being, this is very convoluted, the spirit version of Thomas, who ends up being her father.
Yes.
And who is the guy that phoned her at the beginning.
Yes. And that gets us into a whole other thought. So yes, I think some of the narration, and definitely when she's like, when she's saying things like when she comes across the place called the Red House, you know, when she's saying, and even in the subtitles does it in italics, because you know that that's her narrating the story to Spirit Thomas later on. But it's those moments where she's clearly speaking out loud in the moment. And she's like, again, going back to the bolt cutters example of like, oh, sounds like a spy name, cutters, bolt cutter. You're like, who are you? That's not helping me. That's not, it's taking me out of the experience. Because even if I was creeped out by this scary swimming pool covered in blood before, I'm certainly fucking not anymore. Like you've completely like shifted that tone so that it's away from it.
Well, and so... it's not scary, and I wish that it had more tense moments or more like moments that are actually scary. Again, I feel like the lack of any combat, and that said, I feel like a lot of these games don't often need a lot of combat, but it doesn't often feel like you're in danger, and not having combat and not having really like an inventory to worry about, like I remember part of like the tension in like the old Silent Hill games, or I remember like, you know, I used two bullets more than I should have on this guy. I'm going to reload the save and do it again because I might not have enough bullets to get me through the next chunk. Like that adds so much tension to the game when like every shot or whatever, or every hit with a weapon that's going to break, like feels like it truly matters. Mm-hmm. And this game like doesn't have any of that. We haven't even mentioned the villain yet. I want to talk to you about the villain and see how you feel about that. First, we have a message from our friends, though. Our friends over at the Geekscape Games podcast.
Oh, hello there. I didn't see you come in. I'm Shane O'Hare of the Geekscape Games Podcast, the number one video game podcast on the Geekscape.network. Join myself, Derek Krennevelt, and a guest every fortnight as we discuss video game news, video game reviews, and dissections. That's Geekscape Games every 2 weeks on Geekscape.net.
I'm coming for that title, Shane.
We'll get there.
I don't think it'll take very long. That show's not very good. So the reason all of this is happening, there's a character and he's called the Maw. What did you think of him? He's voiced by Troy Baker, who I think is a very, like...
Oh, is he? Really?
Yeah, yeah. Super interesting voice actor. Yeah. He's voice acted, like, some of my favorite roles. Weird fucking looking tall ass character. not Troy Baker, but the the Maw. What were your initial thoughts on him? And did it change as you kind of learned about kind of where he came from?
It's funny, because I... initially when you first see him, and again, I know I keep comparing this to Observer, but it's the same moment that was, it didn't work in Observer and it didn't work for me here either, where I'm playing this detective game where I'm trying to work out this mystery. I'm trying to figure things out. I'm trying to find, you know, these mentions in the spirit world, these echoes, and all of a sudden, no, wait, there's a creepy monster. Get by the creepy monster. Also, if the creepy monster sees you, you're dead. That's it. Mm-hmm. And
also, how stupid is it? Like, you're obviously right there.
You're
just hiding behind a box, and then you move like behind another box.
And
he's like walking around, and he's really tall, so he's probably got the angle on you.
100%. And the box is probably destroyed as well. Yeah. Let's be honest. Like, the box is probably like all broken and stuff. So I didn't buy it. And then it turns out that later on, electricity is the key to defeating this. Like, and as Derek says, probably like 15 foot tall, creepy dude that has like a really like elongated head sideways. And I feel like, you know, Pyramid Head in the Silent Hill games, mm-hmm. terrifying, because it's this slow encroaching thing that you have no escape and there's no way by. You have to figure out the correct way of doing things. And again, as you say here, it's like, well, I can outsmart this 15 foot monster by crouching. And it just, like, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense for that to be. And the reason for that existing makes even less sense. And that, I think, you know, I'm intrigued as to your thoughts, because when you do actually start to quote unquote unravel the dark mystery, what's your thoughts on it all? Because I took so many notes. I took like 5 notes getting us to this point, and then about 150 notes trying to keep myself right on where we were in the story. And again, I'll say the same thing that I said with Observer. Maybe I'm just not smart enough. Maybe I just don't get it. And maybe my intellectual prowess doesn't lend itself to understanding the true nuance of everything that's going on. But like, so there's Thomas and there's Richard.
The names in this game bothered me. Marianne's fine, Libby's fine, all that sort of stuff. But like, for these three, like, males that are in the game, like, we've got like Henry, we've got Richard, we've got Thomas. Yeah. Like, for a while I was like, who is who again? Like, they're just the most like generic white person names.
Yes.
Like, and it took a while to there are a couple of interesting segments where you play as Thomas and mm-hmm. he kind of like goes inside people's heads to like kill them basically, or like destroy their like innocent piece, or whatnot. But like, until you actually like went deeper with those specific characters, then I was like, okay, that's Richard and Thomas is this guy. Like, it was, I don't know. I might just be dumb, but I was confused by the names for a while.
So the way that I basically understood it is, so Thomas is your father.
Yes.
As you said,
the guy that phoned you at the beginning.
And he's the guy that phoned you at the beginning.
And he designed the resort.
Yes, he was like the owner. And so it turns out, and we should mention at this point, that you grew up in this resort.
Yeah.
And there's a house fire, mm-hmm. Which happens in the single most convoluted way imaginable. But it basically splits you and your sister up. And for some reason, you get amnesia and she doesn't.
Yeah.
And your father, Thomas, makes this decision. And I think they mentioned, correct me if I'm wrong, that you're about 10 when this happens.
Something like that. Yeah, you were both
pretty
young.
Maybe slightly younger. So what he does is he makes the decision to, quote unquote, leave his daughter in the hospital so that she could have a chance at a life. Mm-hmm. A 10-year-old with amnesia. He just lets her go into the foster system. But he goes back to the other sister because she's also a medium and a really, really powerful medium, apparently. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Thomas is a medium as well, which is why he's got the powers
hereditary
to be able to like get into people's head. So the massacre that happens is, and again, this is where it gets really convoluted. So then there's Richard, and Richard is an older guy that Thomas brings to the resort and finds out that he possibly abused.
I don't think it's, I think it's for sure. Yeah. Like, yeah, but they used to be friends.
Yes.
And then Thomas, this is kind of ridiculous. So they used to be friends. Richard is like a painter.
Yeah.
And he, you know, was like out of ideas, down on that sort of stuff. And so he would use the material from Thomas's like visions or Thomas's like explorations in mediumness, to like, you know, fuel his, like,
yeah, creativity
as his muse, basically. Yeah. 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 And then my perception is that they grew apart when, Thomas had a family. And then he ends up bringing Richard to this resort. And I think it's as a means to like spend time with the kids, and so he can like focus on the resort and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And then he ends up molesting
the younger sister.
Not a theme that you see in a game very often.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, we're piecing this together based on like the journals and things that you find and a few cutscenes and that sort of stuff. When Thomas finds out, he freaks out, basically is going to kill Richard. And then instead he goes into his mind, to basically find out like, well, like, it does a couple of things. I think that he just intends to just make him like a shell of a person.
Yeah.
But he also, it also like gives him vision into his mind, and he ends up seeing like what fucked him up. And then still decides to like destroy him, basically. And those segments were actually super interesting to see, you know, obviously these like unforgivable characters with these like insidious actions, but to try to not justify, but give context to like why they're messed up, because,
yeah,
you know, it kind of is similar in like part of the, like a lot of the like main themes in something like The Last of Us or The Last of Us 2 is like this, you know, everything is a cycle, and the cycle of violence like will continue forever or whatnot, it seems like. And this is like a cycle of trauma or a cycle of abuse and all that sort of stuff. And so he was like, he had like an abusive father, and his father was away a lot because he was like a soldier in World War II. And then he befriends this Jewish girl named Rose, who I think was like also living in their house. They were like quite well off, and their family, essentially the Henry's mom was hiding like a Jewish family in.
Yeah.
You know, because they lived in Europe or in Poland or whatever, wherever they lived. And then it ends up, I think the mom, he falls in love with this girl, and then the mom ends up giving this family up to like protect themselves.
Yes.
Type thing, and to get them away from Henry's father, who is like abusive and has like raped her and like all this sort of stuff. And through all of that trauma, Henry becomes just this, continues that cycle of abuse and cycle of trauma. And so Henry like kills the innocent child version of him. Sorry, Thomas.
Yeah.
See, the name's still confusing. Thomas kills the innocent child version of Henry that like lives inside of him. And then so all that remains is like this shell, but it also like appears as this giant monster known as the Child Eater. In the real world, or was it the spirit world?
Well, no, that's he kills it. He messes up the kid version of Richard, remember, because he's in Richard's head.
Did I say Thomas again?
Oh my goodness. I think I can't even remember what he said now. Okay. But
Richard,
and then
I said Henry. That's another Henry. Story yeah. Altogether.
So that's another one altogether. But the thing that really bugged me about this is it's like they got into, and that the moment that you find that Thomas finds out that he abuses Lillian, which is you as the protagonist's younger sister.
Yeah.
That moment is actually,
which you don't know about at that point.
You don't know that you're related. But
yeah.
That moment's quite effective. And then you jump into Richard's head, and it kind of all gets explained away really, oh, well, he was abused by his stepfather, and then it turns out he like stabs his stepfather with a knife that his father gave him to protect the family. And there's this whole moment where his you overhear this conversation between Richard and his father, his biological father, saying, you know, you're the man of the house now, like, I've got to go away, blah, blah, blah. And then he ends up using that knife to ceremoniously kill the stepfather. And there's just this whole really, like, it just gets explained away so quickly. And even Thomas, in the sort of memory of it, kind of goes, oh, well, doesn't change anything, you're still an asshole. And there's these just really weird tonal kind of shifts.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I just found it super, like, I don't know whether it annoyed me or whatever, but I took a note down of when Richard's a young man, he falls in love with the girl called Rose, as you said. And then when he grows up, the girl he abuses is called Lily. And I'm like, is both floral names? Did they really need?
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Did we both really need flower names? Like, is that a thing? And there's one moment as well, that Sadness, I think she gets called Lily at one point. She finds out her name is Lily. Yeah. So she's actually like a spiritual embodiment of the younger sister, because that's Lily Ann. And so there's this really weird thing that I kept noting, where in a variety of different memories, in a variety of different places, you have a young spiritual version of Lily Ann. The big monster, the Maw that we've talked about, actually gets created because of Lily Ann's abuse. She lets that monster go. That monster was inside of her.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the small child version, who also has amnesia. The spirit version also has amnesia, because she doesn't know who she is. She just thinks she's called Sadness. And obviously that came as a result of the original abuse, because that's like a moment in time. And then she lets the monster go. But then, as you keep mentioning, this guy, Henry, who he wants Thomas's powers. He wants the father's powers. And so the reason I said that the house fire is caused in the most convoluted way imaginable is Henry captures Thomas and ties him to a wooden chair, this powerful medium that can go inside people's brain and mess them around and leave them as a hollow shell of a person, captures this guy, ties him to a chair and says, right, you know, give me your powers. Let me know how to use your powers, blah, 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 blah. Of course, Thomas does the dutiful thing and says no. So then Henry puts on like a chainmail glove and punches Thomas unconscious,
because I think it's like the skin on skin contact.
That's what
was my perception.
Which was like, you know, super smart. But then he just goes and burns the house down and then wakes Thomas up, and then Thomas just escapes from the chair. And you're like, when he's like starting to punch you with a chainmail glove, that's not the moment to just suddenly find that you can escape from the chair. It's only when he's burning down your house. That's the moment. There's so much in this that is again, just like, it happens for the most convoluted reason. And I feel like they tried to tie up so much plot, and they try and do so much exposition over the course of like 15 minutes game time. But then some of those sections as well, when you were saying, when you play as Thomas, because again, later on, Thomas regales his parts of the story to you, because you meet him, or you meet the spirit version, later on in this underground bunker. Like, there's even a moment, and I wrote it down, where as you're exploring Richard's memories, you keep going back to this forest labyrinth, this like hedge labyrinth. And you go back three times, I counted, and on the third time, Thomas even out loud says, this is getting tedious. And I wrote a note down that was like, yeah, it is. It's really, this is dull.
Because each other time, it's like you're about to get where you think you need to go, and then it like flashes back somewhere else.
Yeah. And then those moments where it does that, there's a couple moments when you're Thomas as well, where like you're going down this corridor and you're hearing these like echoed of conversations from Richard and his father and his stepfather, and you'll like get to the door at the end of the corridor.
And it like stretches away.
And then the corridor stretches out. Yeah. And it's just frustrating. It's not like scary or creepy, or it's just frustrating. And maybe that was the intention. Maybe they wanted to make you frustrated in that moment. And if they did, it really worked, because it just made me mad. And the game picks and chooses moments where you can sprint, and moments where you can go into a light jog, and moments where you're just walking, and that's it. And it always seems to be these moments where the corridor disappears out in front of you. It's like, no, you can move at a snail's pace, a snail with broken legs. And yeah, that was annoying.
Well, and because it like wants you to hear the entirety of the audio that's playing, and so they can't let you run because then you'll make it to the end too fast, and you're like, you know, that sort of stuff. So it's very like it's a super linear game, but also linear in like the amount that the speed that it lets you move at, even when there's just a direct straight path in front of you.
So that's what really, ultimately, you know, gameplay aside, everything else aside, that's what really annoyed me, was the fact that this whole plot about everything that had happened, just, I had way more questions than I had answers with everything that went on. And it just really, really frustrated me. It's going to sound incredibly harsh of me to say this, but I felt nothing for Marianne, like as a character. Like, I don't think she developed. All that really happened is that she got her memory back. Like, suddenly she knew that she was Marianne, and she grew up in the red house at the resort, and there was a house fight. So, okay, she got her memory back, so you could say that's definitely character growth, but she didn't change from start to finish. She was the same person. I feel like she was just as well adjusted at the start when she was burying her foster father, than she was at the end. And the ending. Can you tell me your thoughts on the last, like, you know, from the bunker onwards?
Mm-hmm. I really liked the bunker. Like the setting of the bunker and the just kind of the exposition that you get in the bunker as to, like, essentially, so as you mentioned, Marianne is left in the hospital, and Thomas and Lily, basically Thomas takes Lily to this bunker because she's too powerful, and like he's worried about what, you know, the Maw was created in. My perspective was that she agreed to like let the Maw free if he got them out of the fire.
Yes.
And so now he's like wandering around the spirit world, and he like basically like absorbs people, or like wears them as his skin, basically. And so as you're getting some exposition in the resort itself, like these people end up like, in some cases, like a nurse is like killing her patients and like all that sort of stuff. And it's because, you know, she's being
led by the Maw.
Led by controlled. The Maw.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I thought was kind of, which was quite interesting, I thought, actually. But I just like the idea that they stayed in this, it stayed in this bunker for so long, and it's like an old Soviet bunker, and they've converted it into like a living space, and she's, I think, had stayed there now for like 20 years or like
something like that. Yeah.
16 years or some ridiculous amount of time. And then I think the caretaker of the resort ended up letting her out to like see the sun, 'cause he felt bad for her or something. And then I think this is what lets the Maw loose again at that point.
Yeah.
I think.
And I have two questions at this point.
Yeah.
Cause there's a moment where the Maw, you end up talking to the Maw at the very, very end.
Yeah.
And it turns out that he needs a powerful medium to inhabit so that he can survive. Now, my first question is, if Lillian, if the younger sister, is powerful enough, if she's a powerful enough medium to manifest...
Powerful enough that that Thomas had to keep her away and not keep Marianne away.
A, keep her away, but B, to create a monster that roams the spirit world and can inhabit people and wear them as a skin suit, that seems pretty powerful enough to me. So if she created him, why didn't he just turn around and eat her first of all?
It's a good question. I think that it's because... for instance, the end, so you find out that this dream or this like memory that Marianne has had about like that it all starts with a dead girl, and you see someone shooting like a girl on a dock. You end up on this dock, and it turns out that it was not a dream, but like a vision of the future. My perception of that was because Lily basically is like, you have to kill me, and like, I have to die, and you're going to have to be the one that kills me. My perception of that is because if the Maw, like, you know, like a body sustains him for X amount of time, and potentially Lily could sustain him for quite some time. But I think when she dies, he would die as well. That was my only thought. And Marianne, I think that's a good question.
Right. So that's the way that they kind of explain it, is she kind of in this moment, because it's meant to be this very tense moment where it's one sister trying to decide whether she's going to kill herself or she's going to kill her sister, or how's she going to go about this.
Yeah.
And it just kind of, again, it gets explained away like, if I die, it dies. But so that's why it has to be me. And you know, they, as you say, they've survived for all this time in the bunker. My second question is that your father, Thomas, like, and you mentioned it earlier on, where there's these moments where you kind of have to, as the medium we should have mentioned earlier on, you get these kind of like two abilities. And one ability is you create a spirit shield around yourself. Mm-hmm. And because in the spirit world, apparently moths are the most evil thing in the world and chew you to death very quickly, within seconds, like cartoon piranha fish. And the other ability.
And real piranha fish.
And what are real piranha. I mean, 100%. With the little, like, they circle around
you. Do you ever see the movie Piranha?
And they leave you just the bones.
Do you see the movie Piranha 3D?
I haven't.
When that guy has to get. Oh,
thankfully.
It's really good.
Thankfully.
He's got it. The piranhas eat this guy's legs. Uh-huh. And then he's like. And then someone builds him like machine guns for legs. And then at one point, the piranhas are coming. So he's like, bring me my legs. And then they put the machine gun legs on him. And then he like shoots the piranhas with his machine gun legs. Like, how could you not want to see that?
I mean, how do the guns work underwater?
He's above the water. He's shooting into the water. It's shallow water. All works out fine.
I have a lot of questions right now, but that would probably be another 2-hour podcast of just questions. Even just about that one scene that I would have.
That's the only scene I remember.
Well, there's probably a reason for that. Wait, if it's a 3D movie, though, was there not? There would have been several scenes where piranhas just jump directly towards the counter, right?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
As long as that was there, then
it was a good time to go to the theater when 3D was the hot stuff.
Remember theaters? Remember that?
Barely.
So, my second question is, you get these two abilities, and the other ability, rather than the spirit shield, is like you can kind of overcharge electronics to you know, power up elevators and things like this. And as Marianne, you have to find these spirit ammo, basically, that charges up your abilities. You get two charges, and then you've got to go and recharge. Then as Thomas, now again, just to reiterate the point, Marianne is meant to be so powerful that she is going to sustain the Maw. When the Maw wears her, is going to sustain him indefinitely, and he's going to be able to go around, and that's it. Like, she's the most powerful medium that's there. Now, she gets two charges of this. When you're playing as Thomas, you can just use this all the time. No recharge necessary. Because when you're going through the forest, like, there's all these like weird spirit tentacles that are like give you the most wind-up time imaginable to be like, oh, I'm going to slap you. I'm coming. You ready? You ready? You ready? And then you've got to like time your spirit shield to like fend them off. But he can use it indefinitely. So clearly... And he can inhabit people's minds to break them down, and as we've already mentioned. So really, who is the most powerful medium here? But my question is, like, you know, if the Maw doesn't go for Lillian, is he going to be going for Thomas instead? Like, or if he doesn't go for Thomas instead, why doesn't he go for Thomas?
Wouldn't the Maw have been stuck in the bunker and Spirit Thomas was there as well, right?
Well, yeah, so my understanding, I think you were right when you talked about it before. I think that Thomas and Lillian were in the bunker. I think
this is how confusing this
right,
game can be. Yeah.
And it's just like, if we're sitting here going, okay, but were they locked in the bunker at the time? Like, clearly something's wrong. If you haven't delivered the story to me in the way that I can completely empathize, sympathize, and completely understand what's going on. And again, maybe we're just dumb, Derek. Maybe... That's it. Maybe we just don't get it. But I want to get it because, again, the reason it made me so sad to skip on this is moments like this. And when you go from a start that was so strong, and then by the end of this car crash, it is a car crash. It's terrible. Like, the ending of this just made me so bummed out, and not in the way that I think they intended. I think they really wanted me to feel... For Marianne at the end, oh, she's got this Sophie's Choice at the end. Does she kill her sister? Does she kill herself? Like, oh my goodness. And really at the end of it, I was just like, just pull the trigger, man. Just do one of them. It's fine. Like, it just felt so meaningless. Everything by the end of it just felt so, so meaningless. And when the end credits rolled, I cheered, man. I genuinely.
Finally, it's over.
Yeah. So the question you originally asked me that led us down this path was, did I prefer this or The Observer? Mm-hmm. And I actually think I would play Observer before I played this again.
Really?
And it's for that reason, because it starts out so strong, and it gave me so much hope, and then it burned every last hope that I had down. What do you think? Because of course it does the very cheeky thing of going fading to black before you hear the gunshot go off.
So it leaves it very cliffhanger. Yeah. And I don't know if that's because they intend on doing a sequel
It's I'm just putting that out there right now. They better not.
Yeah, or if it's just like one of those stories where they just wanted to leave it like up for discussion, you know, the like the end of Inception type thing. Like,
yeah, is he in the dream or not?
Yeah. So like the only ending that makes sense though is for him, for her, for Marianne to shoot Lily. Like,
you think?
Well, because it's like, I mean, she just like maybe she has her some old memories back, but it seems like she just found out that she has a sister. So why is she, aside from like, yes, you're my sister, she shouldn't be that attached to her. Not more than she's attached to her own life, that's for sure. But also like, if that, like she has seen firsthand what the Maw can do and that he caused this massacre of like hundreds of people in this resort. And if he gets free, like what happens then? Like I don't know. I feel like there really only is one choice. And I feel like it's for her to shoot Lily. Cause he like, if Marianne was to shoot herself, then the Maw still exists only in the spirit world at this point, but it still exists. And then what is stopping him at some point? Now Lily's out and free. I'm sure she's not just going to go back in the bunker, but now, can he not just, things won't sustain him for as long, but can the Maw not just like take over other bodies at that point?
Well, I think that was the thing that like there was a specific line and I can't remember exactly what it was. I didn't write it down, but he was saying something like, you know, or maybe it was the conversation between Mary and Lily that he needed a medium in order to sustain himself because he's dying. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's why, cause he manufactured the situation to bring Marianne back to
right.
the Neva resort. So I think it turned out that actually he had used Thomas's voice or whatever, or said he was Thomas or whatever to bring her back. I don't actually think it was Thomas, because when you meet the spirit version of him, is he not like, what are you doing here kind of thing?
But the spirit version, like Marianne was catching the spirit version up on everything that's happened.
Yeah, so
I think
you're
that
right.
The spirit version is disconnected from the real world version.
Yes.
So he wouldn't have had that context.
Yes, you're right, because he does actually say, the spirit does say like, oh, I've been, you know, I haven't seen real world Thomas for a long time or whatever. And again, if they do ever do the medium too, I will put $5 right now that it's Thomas trying to find his surviving daughter, whichever one didn't get shot. I'll put money on it. But
I'll play that.
No, I wouldn't. Well, do you know, if there's more stakes, you know, if the stakes are higher, because again, we've said it before, that there's no inventory management, there's no resource management. So the penalty for failure, the penalty for death is having to play more of the game, which I suppose is penalty enough. But I don't know, man. Do you know, there was a last note or a couple of last notes that I wrote down. Was that the cutscenes in the game as well. And I don't know whether it's just because of that point when there was multiple cutscenes in a row that I was just so done already. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's another note I want to talk to you about in a second. when the cutscenes are happening, I wasn't invested in any of the characters, but it seemed like you would get a cutscene and then you'd have one of these forced, very slow walking sections for 5 minutes. And then it leads into another cutscene. One of those happens right at the very, very end of the game where when you leave the bunker.
You like walk through the forest for a bit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You walked, and then that's
when the whole thing could have just been a cutscene.
Why force me to walk so slowly? And I mean, like, please, people, understand when I say you're walking slowly. Like, imagine the slowest you have ever moved in a video game. And then half that speed. It is it's unbearably slow. It's like she's got depleted uranium boots on. It's so slow. And then there's another cutscene, and that's how the game, like.
Yeah.
It just, I don't know.
She's definitely not like over encumbered like in a Bethesda game.
Well, there's no inventory. Exactly. Yeah. There's a couple.
Must be a really heavy flashlight.
Like the most heavy.
Oh, the bolt cutters, though. The bolt cutters. Those are pretty big.
You mean the spy cutter. Bolt cutter. The other note that I had written down here was, there's so many notes here. there's this bit where you're playing as Thomas, and you have to walk around this section where there's this massive beast that's like chasing you, and it's chasing you through like filing cabinets and mm-hmm. books, and everything's oversized, and it's very Alice in Wonderland. And as you have to walk across this like little beam, and as you're at the very, very end of the beam, this big beast like tramples through and like smashes the beam that's like inches away from your feet. Not only do you physically not react to it, you're still just doing that kind of like balancing act. Like there's no, like you don't jump away from it. Like, and I mean, this beast is huge. It's like 20 feet tall or something like that. And it rattles past you, and there's this big sort of explosion as wood splintering all around you. And you're just like, doo-doo-doo. And then I think again, he makes some snarky ass comment, and it like, I don't know. There's just so many moments of things like that that just really, really took me away mm-hmm. From it. There was another note that I saw that was there, and I can't remember where it is. Ah, I've lost it. That's okay. I think that's ultimately why it was a skip for me. Oh, yeah. No, that was it. There's a moment. What made me really sad and. You know, the ending made me really angry because I was just so furious at that point that I was just, the tone of it didn't make sense. The story of it doesn't make sense. The mystery doesn't make sense. And then you get this 2 minute long walk between cutscenes. And so then end credits roll. And then there's a section at the end where there's a message from Bloober Team that comes up. And it says, you know, we're a small developer. Like, this is the most ambitious game that we've ever made yet. And it was this really heartfelt message. And I felt like such an asshole because I was hating on this game so much. And I just like, you know, I'm a creative person myself. And if I had put that much effort and love and care and attention into something that someone just came along and shat all over, I would be devastated. Of course, mm-hmm. I would be devastated. So I had this little moment of like, I mean, I hated this game. I really hated it, and I wouldn't wish it upon my worst enemies. Yeah. But there's moments in this that I'm like, Bloober Team, stick to that. Like, if you want to pay tribute to the old survival horror games, like, give me a full game where there's none of the spirit world stuff. Give me a full game of that intro section, because there's this really effective moment. And even at the time, it was after I'd started playing the game, but before you'd asked me to do this episode of the podcast. And there's this moment in the funeral home where you come back out. You've just attached the guy's tie to the body. You've kind of fixed mm-hmm. up his tie. And there's this really sweet moment where she's like trying to make this, you know, body look as nice as it can for the funeral or whatever. And then you leave that room to start heading back up the stairs. And just at the top of the stairs, you just see this shadow. Mm-hmm. And I sent you a screenshot of that. Just this is going to be scary as hell.
I remember that moment, and I was just like, oh yeah, here we go.
And then
I was going to say, there's like right shortly after you get to the resort, which I actually really liked that part when you get to the resort and you're trying to find a way in, mm-hmm. and then maybe it's shortly after you get in and there's like some sort of spirit, whether it's sadness or whatnot, is kind of guiding you in that, like she's turning on the light in the distance and mm-hmm. like telling you like which way to turn. I really like that.
Yeah.
But there's a super effective jump scare. Like, what's shortly that? After you're like looking through a hole in a wall or something in the thing. And then I don't think it was the mob, but something like moves. And it scared the shit out of me to the point where I like had to pause and take a break. And I was like, I'm all for this. Like, this is great. Because it felt like a well-placed jump scare. It didn't feel like it existed just for the, just to exist.
I do not remember that at all.
It was probably like, I don't know, less than an hour in.
Yeah.
And then there wasn't another scary moment. Like, that was it.
Yeah.
You got those two things.
And I had so much hope and like, there was so much of that first moment that was really disarming, and you know, it I was invested at that point. And then it just chipped away at me and chipped away at me until the end. And I felt bad for saying it, but almost out loud on the dock, I almost was just like, just shoot one of you. Just hurry up. Like, just go.
It's just kill them both.
Just, I mean, that's it. Shoot her and then shoot yourself. Like, that, double the damage. Like, but yeah.
Then he's for sure not getting out.
Exactly. And I felt like even going back to that moment and just like you said it so perfectly and you synopsize the end of it so perfectly, where she lets them all go so that you all can survive the house fire. And I feel like, you know, a big sacrifice like that in any kind of story, like that's the end game play, right? That's the Tony Stark clicking his fingers with the sure. Infinity Gauntlet. That, like,
spoilers.
I mean, if you haven't seen that by this point, I have no hope for you. But you know, it should be when we're invested in that character, then we know, okay, they made this big sacrifice play and you feel something in that moment because you're invested in the character.
Right.
But it turns out that sacrifice that she made was for nothing. Like, she let this monster go and it killed hundreds of people just so that either your sister could shoot you or your sister could shoot herself. Like, the sacrifice is meaningless. It meant
nothing. As a child who doesn't want to die, how could she know that or fathom that?
For sure, and I get that.
But I totally see what you mean.
Like,
as well.
from a character perspective, certainly. Like, you know, I cannot imagine being a 10-year-old or younger kid and having to deal with that moment. And what would that do for me? And how would I react? And if I knew that there was this terrible beast inside me that could save my family but kill hundreds of people potentially, do you know what? As a 10-year-old kid, I might have made that choice. Hell, as a 35-year-old guy,
yeah, right.
You know, if you told me you can save your family but 100 people are going to die, that's a tough choice to make. It really is. But none of that was explored. None of that was explored. It was just like, there's a scary monster and he is going to wear you like a suit and blah, blah, blah. Like, and it felt so like, I don't know.
I feel like that's a really good point in that, like, I feel like just what you're describing now, I feel like there's so much to this world and there is so much to these characters, but we are like not even getting through the top layer of it.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like so much of what they did, and I liked this game. Mm-hmm. I still think, you know, I maybe like it less after hearing you piss on it for an hour. But I quite liked this game. I enjoyed my time with it. I finished it in like two sittings because I did find the plot and the way it carried forward, you know, like good, decent enough to that I wanted to see it through very quickly. I wish this was a bigger game. Like, one of the things that I like about this game is that it took only two sittings and that I like short games because it means that I'm more likely to finish them. Mm-hmm. But there's so much more to unpack here, both in the cycles of trauma that they're dealing with and the like newfound sisterhood and like, how the fuck did you end up in this like spirit world? And why does the Ma look the way, like, there's so many things to do and to talk about, and none of them or very few of them are explored at all. And the ones that are explored are barely explored.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, there's something about existential horror, which I always find is far more effective than, you know, ooh, there's a scary monster, look at it, blah, because that, once you see it, that it just completely takes it away from it. So, you know, those moments earlier on that we talked about where you're having to sneak past the Maw or you're having to like rig up there's a bit where you've got to rig up this generator that's on a like a mine cart kind of train tracky type bit, and there's this big convoluted section where you've got to rig this up so that it falls into the water while the Maw's in the water so you can electrocute it. So for some reason electricity in the spirit world is super powerful, but and you know that, so things like that, if those sections weren't there but it was always this voice, because the voice, like, here's one piece of praise I will give the medium: the voice acting was actually really good. And I know this was a problem that you and I had with Observer, was that the voice acting was shocking. It was terrible. With this, like, the people did their jobs so well as far as the voice acting goes, like, albeit,
I think, like, Sadness especially, I thought was...
She was brilliant. And, like, inconsistent tone aside, you know, Marianne's voice, like, the actor that played her was great. She was brilliant. And especially in those moments where, you know, she was... the tone was perfect, where it was meant to be a sad moment and she was sad, or it was meant to be a scary moment and she was scared. She did her job really well. And those kind of things, you know, kudos to them. Like, they clearly learned from previous games and put a lot more time and effort into that, and it really showed. And you know, as you said before, the echoes and stuff, those interactions that you hear, again, really clever little system, really cool little mm-hmm. little moment. You know, it's been in other games before, sure, absolutely, but it was probably done here better than most that I've seen it. But it doesn't
to make them sort of interactive, or to make them, like, rather than just an audio log that you pick up, which wouldn't make sense in the environment, I don't think. Like, but rather than that, or rather than just having paper letters or whatever, to make them part of the gameplay, like, oh, I need to find a piece of this so I can complete this echo so that it actually plays out or whatever. And I thought it was, like, interesting.
Do you know what? I was kind of reminded of, weirdly enough, System Shock 2, a game from a bygone era, where you're...
Remake coming out soon, isn't it?
Oh, seriously?
Oh, do you not know
I don't know
this?
About this.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's exciting. But so that is genuinely one of the most creepy games of all time. But there's these moments with that.
Yeah. Well, I know games like Bioshock are, like, super influenced.
Right.
I've never played System Shock, but I loved Bioshock, and I know that System Shock comes up all the time in discussions around the Bioshock series.
But as you say, like, Bioshock is almost like the spiritual successor of the System Shock series. And, you know, it's a very similar premise, lone survivor wandering around a ship or a city or whatever. And there's these moments in that, and the reason I'm referencing that is that there's moments in System Shock 2 where you'll tap on, like, a computer system or whatever, and you'll actually see ghosts of the crew that are now dead, and you'll see them act out, and it's fully sort of embodied and acted in that way again. And I think, again, something like that might have been really cool. For me, if I'm thinking of what a medium is, I wouldn't want to see that as, like, oh, we're in this war-torn hellscape and everything's all bad textures, and suddenly I've got white hair for no explored reason, and I've got mushrooms growing out of my jacket again for no explored reason. But it would be far more effective and far scarier if I'm walking by a door or whatever, and I overhear a conversation, I open the door, and there's nothing there, but you can hear the conversation. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's something that's far more effective about something you can hear, but you can't see.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Like, you know,
well, and even going to, like there's so many, like, modern horror movies and stuff, for instance, that, like, so much of the dread or so much of the atmosphere goes away as soon as you, like, you see the thing for X amount of time, or they show too much of it, and then it's like, oh, it's just a CG, like, piece of shit. Like,
yeah. And I think that's what they did with the Maw, because the first time you see him, you see him in his entirety, and especially once you've died 6 or 7 times, because you're not really sure of which way to go, and your crouch is effective behind boxes but not so effective behind much else. And, you know, once, and again, there's a really great piece of advice that I heard about, like, that kind of thing, is, like, the threat of death has to be there for things to be, like, to keep you on tenterhooks, to keep you motivated to survive and be scared and things like that. But once you do die, once you go through that and you reload, suddenly that threat is gone. So you're just like, oh, I'm just going to replay the section until I get through. But again, I feel like with a bit more, like, resource management, a bit more, like, having to plan things out, having to actually survive, this could have been really effective. I think get rid of the spirit world stuff, or embed it somehow in the real world that only she can see, or maybe she sees it for snippets of time. You know, I know that you and I talked about the artifacting in Observer again, but, you know, maybe, dare I say it, maybe even a bit more of that in this, rather than it being a completely separate reality. And again, just that two reality mechanic, I feel like was just there for the sake of it being like, oh, we've got the shiny new thing that's like, you've never seen this before. Yeah. And it just the payoff wasn't good enough. And it made me really sad. It bummed me out really hard, man. I was really mad.
Do you know that they first started working on this game in 2012?
Oh my God. What? Like, so that makes me feel even... That's,
I know. Well, that's like, what, that was my goal with that, yeah.
Nine years.
It was originally going to be a Wii U / PS3 game, but, you know, it changed it changed a lot along the way, but then came out as this series console exclusive.
That makes me
but,
so sad.
Like 9 years of some of their lives.
I know. And I've just chat all over it for the last hour. Yeah. Do you know what though? Like what it gives me a bit of hope, and I'll tell you why. Because there's moments and they're clearly a developer that, you know, reviews their old work tapes. And what I mean by that is they've clearly gone back to their older games and gone, okay, what worked about this? What didn't work about this? Like what
when I remember when we talked about Observer as well, like I think each of their games has these like super effective moments or moments of like brilliance that they just really need to focus on.
Yeah.
And then like their projects in some way just get lost along the way.
Yeah.
Like I liked this way more than I liked Observer. Mm-hmm. Probably not as much as I liked. I really liked Blair Witch though. Mm. I might have to go back
and play, like, because I avoided Blair Witch like the plague because I knew it was Blue Routine, bless them. And I was just like, there's no way I'm playing that. But you, I remember you saying you actually really enjoyed. So I might have to go back and play it.
And it's another, like, you know, I their games are generally pretty short, which is great. Mm-hmm. But it's another short title I've just always been super interested in, like, the Blair Witch lore and stuff. So the fact that it like is in that universe and adds to that and gives some exposition to that, whether it's considered canon or not, I'm not sure, but I just found that super interesting for sure.
Yeah. I think it does give me hope and I really, you know, I'm excited to see what they do. Like as a developer, I think they've got nice ideas and they're definitely doing things that, you know, despite it being a mechanic for being mechanic's sake, I don't think I've ever played a game where you can see the same thing but in two different realities over the same screen and been able to render that, been able to do that. Like they've done so well in a lot of things with this, which is why it makes me so upset that I hated the game so much.
Do you know what was one thing that really bothered me?
Cool.
Was in the spirit world, when there would all of a sudden be, and it was like, it made sense because there was usually some blockage in the real world or something, but there's just like a stretched out piece of human skin that's blocking your way.
Oh my God.
And then you have to cut it with this like razor blade, which the first time you're like, ew, this is like weird and gross. Why is this happening? Yeah. But then it happens so frequently. And it's like, is it like a hidden loading screen? Like it's so slow.
Yeah.
The act of like cutting through it. Like that was my only thought, is that like why this is, you know, it could be used a couple times for plot or for just to have something interesting there. Yeah. But it seemed like it happened a lot and it just took so long to pull the razor through the skin with your analog stick.
And you're like, you've absolutely reminded me of that. And thank you so much. Cause like the first time that happens, and again, for the first time that you kind of use your spirit powers to get to a different bit and, you know, you're kind of thinking, okay, I know I'll need to maybe sometimes go into the spirit world to pick up an object and take it here and unlock a door and like that kind of stuff. I can get behind. Sure. If that's the mechanics and that's the way you want me to do it, that's great. Cool. If that's how I have to solve puzzles, great. I might actually have to think on my feet. And I remember finding the razor and it was like, oh, I'll need to use that to cut something, or I might have to attach it to something or whatever. And as you say, the first time you cut through that big like wall of skin, I was my thought was, again, because I quite quickly got into the thing of thinking, oh, it's a point and click adventure game. I'm playing Grim Fandango, but with better graphics. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And the first time you cut through that, like the skin wobbles and like the way that it tears, it is gross, man. Like I did kind of wince at the time, being like, oh God, definitely, this is upsetting. But as you say, by the time you get to the end of the game, the minute I saw anything that had that skin over, I was like, well, better get the old razor out. Here we go. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be that way. It should be disgusting every single time. And you're reminding me there was something else. There was another puzzle. Derek, I need to take a second to talk about it. I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine.
There's another puzzle in this where you're trying to work out a lot of the first kind of section of the game is trying to work out who Thomas is, because you've only got the name.
Right.
And there's this moment where you get to this room and there's like a U-shaped table. And on the bottom of the U, on the joining kind of part of the two sides, is the list of names of people who are at this meeting and what chair they're sitting at. So I looked at that and I was like, oh, okay, well, there's that name. So I just need to work out who sat across from there. So I went and clicked on that and I was like, okay, that's chair 13. So that makes that chair 8 or whatever the numbers were. And I was like, great. So whoever sat in that chair is the person I'm looking for. Fantastic. And then the game wouldn't let me progress and I could not work out why. It took me Derek, I think I aged 5 years by the time I saw, because the game wants...
That's why it took you two
exactly,
months.
Because it genuinely, it wants you to solve it. It wants you to interact with the objects in a particular order so that even though that you've worked it out as the player, Marianne hasn't worked it out.
Yes.
So you've got to click on stuff. And I was just like, no, I'm sorry. If I'm reacting quicker than the protagonist, like, no. That... If the whole game was centered around solving things, which, you know, they've said this is a mystery game, it's about solving a mystery that's happened, you should let me be able to work the things out without having to go through this. Oh, okay, so we've got to go over here and click. Okay, now we've got to click on that, and then we should click the list again.
Well, it's like if you had to like do every letter one by one in Wheel of Fortune instead of just being like to solve the puzzle.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's a perfect analogy for it. Like, you know, if you're gonna try and make me work stuff out, let me work it out. Don't force me to make Marianne work out. And again, just the, and you know, I'm not a coder, so I don't know how difficult that would be to you know have those kind of joining paths where if you can type in the name or whatever, then it works or however that is. But that was something that puzzle in itself just really infuriated me. And because you had to do it in that particular order, it just set the tone for like the rest of the. I was like, okay, well, I better make sure I'm doing this in the exact order that the game wants me to do it in. And it was another reason why it didn't feel like a game. It just felt like I was there controlling an elongated cutscene, essentially.
Yeah, that's fair. I love elongated cutscenes, though. I'm a cutscene guy.
You're a cutscene. Like, a cutscene done really well, sure. And if it's effective, then great. Yeah. But if it's a cutscene that makes me walk 15 minutes in between cutscenes for no reason at a snail's pace.
I used to love, like... It likes. I feel like there's numerous instances in like some of the Metal Gear Solid games where you'd have like a long ass cutscene and then walk down a hallway and then have another long ass cutscene.
Yeah,
and I was all for it. I had no problem with it.
Or the codec conversations that you would have were like 25 minutes long, and you'd be like, "Yo, can I get back to being this stealth ninja, please?" Like, So I was really sad that I didn't like this game, but it was really. Linda was what my wife was watching the last sort of part with me, and Linda has even less patience than I do for things.
I hadn't noticed.
Oh my god, the minute the credits rolled, literally both of us were like, "Yay!" like out loud, and she was just like, "I can't believe they made you walk in between those cutscenes." And I was like, "Right?"
So funny.
It was really good. So it was a beautiful moment. But now I'm playing Valheim and Magic the Gathering Arena.
Magic the Gathering Arena.
I'm having a blast with those.
It's heaven.
It's good.
It's good. We don't need to talk about that right now, though.
But it's far, far superior to the medium.
Do you have any other words on the medium, or do you just want to move on from it forever until the sequel comes out?
Medium 2. I mean, I will really laugh if it is that you're the father trying to find whatever daughter didn't get shot and re-embody yourself with your spirit counterpart. I would go back and play it to see if they fix the things. I would give it a chance, but the minute it took me to a puzzle that I had to force the character to solve rather than solving myself, I'd be out.
So Bloober Team has let you down twice now. It sounds like you said you may go to Blair Witch at some point.
I might try
the next Bloober Team game that comes out. It depends on what it is, or are you just like, I'm not really into it?
Do you know what? It's funny. I almost feel like I owe it to them now. Like, I almost feel invested. And as I say, that little message at the end of the game, I'm a sucker for actual humans trying to be empathetic.
Absolutely.
So the minute they were like, "We poured our heart and soul into this," I was like, oh, guys, God bless you, guys and girls and theys and them. Yeah. Like, it just, that kind of hit me, and I felt bad for shitting all over it for so long. But I think if they do another game, I'll definitely give it a try, especially if it's on Game Pass. I'll definitely give it a try. But as I say, the minute they fall into their old habits,
you're done.
I'm out.
Yeah, that's just talking about like that message. I always think of going back to like picking up the physical copy of The Witcher 3 and like opening it for the first time. And there's like a bunch of crap that they give you, but also not crap, but like stickers and like a map and like all that sort of stuff. But there's also like a little thank you card in there. And I was like, this is so sweet.
See, like moments like that, like that really tugs at my heartstrings. And especially because of the way the video game industry is, like the folks that work on video games, man, they just don't have a life. Like they don't sleep. Like, you know, because of the pressure of video game fans, and I suppose we could do six other podcasts on Cyberpunk and its release. And like, for CD Projekt Red, I genuinely feel for that team because the amount of pressure that they had on them to follow through with something that clearly wasn't ready yet.
Yeah.
That breaks my heart. It really does. Mm-hmm. But that's a whole other story for a whole other time.
Yes. All right. Well, with that said, I'm sorry you didn't enjoy it. I'm sorry I forced you through that.
No, you didn't. And like, it's really funny because I love doing these podcasts with you, and I love chatting video games with you. And I think there's a certain catharsis in getting things off your chest. And
that's fair. And to get to do it like in depth, like we've been chatting. We started talking about other stuff, but we've been talking for a good hour about this game.
Yeah.
Like how often would you do that organically?
100%. And I think there's something really nice about that. And I love being a guest on the show, and anytime you want me back, I'll happily come on, even if it's for a terrible game like this. But it's never forcing me through it. I mean, I did sit down and made sure again with Observer, like I did it in two sessions as well, but my reason for doing it in two sessions is because I knew if I didn't finish it in the second, I wasn't going to go back for a third.
But I
wanted to make the commitment to try and get through
that one. I feel like I barely remember Observer now, and I remember most of my problems aside from like the voice acting. I had so many technical issues. It would be one I would be interested in playing the next gen version of it. But I don't know, not enough to actually do it.
You're interested, but not that
much. not to that level. Well, with that said, why don't we go ahead and see what we are playing next. I'm going to change things up a bit. We're going to try something new. I'm not going to choose the game. It's going to be mostly random. I'm going to draw two games, and I'm going to have you choose the game that we're going to play next.
Let's do
those two games. Maybe it sticks around, maybe it doesn't. I just thought it sounded cool. So here we go. It is The Medium. No, I'm just and you're coming back for it.
Yeah.
No,
I quit.
Right. All right. So next episode. So would you like us to play Dead Space or Call of the Sea?
Have you ever played Dead Space before?
When it came out.
Yeah. I would do Call of the Sea.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, I would do Call of the Sea.
Don't tell me why, but okay. Okay, great. Call of the Sea it is. Awesome. Before we go, do you have anything you would like to share? Any links you'd like to post? You're a beautiful musician, you and your wife.
Thanks, buddy.
I don't know if that's something you want to throw out there.
Yeah, absolutely. For anyone that's interested in the folk Americana kind of style of music, I just go under my own name, Doogie Greig. It's DoogieGreig. We are doing far more impressive and wonderful things over at What We Embrace. So that's the band that my wife and I have. And we're a folk Americana duo. We've just done a lot of really cool things with Folk Alliance. We had a showcase with them just a few weeks back. So you can find us on social media. It's always going to be What We Embrace Music or just whatweembrace.com. You'll find all of our links and stuff there. We put out a Christmas single at the end of last year, if anyone's feeling particularly Christmassy, called Gather Around. But other than that, we've got big things coming up this year.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
So looking forward to buying those vinyls.
So make
them happen.
And listen, you're about the only person I know that has vinyl, so I probably just need to do a run of one vinyl and just
sell it. I'll do it. Yeah.
But thanks for having me back, man. I always have a blast here.
It is a blast.
Anytime you need me back, I'm here.
I'm sure I'll be calling on you sooner than you want.
So. For the medium too.
Awesome. That's it. Yeah. Like I said at the start of the show, we're going monthly at this point. So you can hear my voice again and my guest, whoever that will be, in about a month's time. And if you haven't heard enough of me, I'm also on the Geekscape Games podcast, which happens every 2 weeks, so twice a month. And for this show, for Geekscape Games, for all of our other fun shows, about all the things you could imagine, non-video game and video game together, both of them, just head to geekscape.net. If you like the show, share it with a friend, you know, give us a 5-star, all of that good stuff that you're not going to do anyway. But if you do, I appreciate you. But other than that, we'll see you in a month when we talk about Call of the Sea. Thanks again, Doogie.
Thanks, bud.
Bye-bye.
Bye, bud.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network. You're listening to the Geekscape Network.